Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cryptid Studies Institute Radio. I'm Johnny Henderson, your host, and hopefully my son Elijah is here with me tonight.
Hello, how you doing?
I am extraordinarily tired. Rough week at work today, this week. And speaking of work, I want to give a big shout out to a couple of supporters. John Connor, if you're out there, we're glad to have you as a subscriber. And hello, Jason King. Boy, we have been very busy. We've had to put a couple of shows on the back burners. We've had guests that got sick and couldn't be on the show. But we haven't wasted that time. We have been off in the mountains putting together or filming to put together some more Nightmare Nuggets. Got a brand new nugget up today, The Beasts of Pocket Wilderness. If you haven't seen it yet, please go give it a look. We have been, I think we filmed enough to do 8 new nuggets, didn't we, Elijah?
Yes, we filmed them all across Ray County and one in St. Louis at the Real Exorcist House, the one that inspired the movie.
Then that would be 9 new ones, 10 counting the one we just got up today. So we've been very busy. We've actually... Whatever, you're confusing me, boy. But we've been working feverishly. We've got a couple of upcoming cons to get ready for us. We've been trying to design and order merch so we'd have something to give away and to sell in some cases. We actually have a vendor now who's been making us these really extremely awesome Bigfoot cutouts with a plasma cutter. So... we'll have those to offer to people. We may even give some of those away, depending on how things go. So for that vendor, let me just say, Aaron McKinney, you are killing it with that plasma cutter. We are stoked to be in business with you.
Absolutely. Very great work, Aaron.
We'll try to post some pictures of them on the actual Facebook page and Instagram. And if you, for some reason, would like to buy one, send us a message and we'll tell you how to get one. Tonight we have a very special guest, Nate Bowling. A lot of his friends call him Bull because he's a very big man and apparently strong as Bull. He's been investigating this Bigfoot phenomenon for almost 30 years now, maybe even 30 years. And he's got some exciting things he wants to share with us tonight. Elijah,
yeah, it's gonna be very
is Nate ready? What's that?
I'm ready.
Hello, Nate. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well,
we're
my
excited
friend.
To talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Very happy. And just every opportunity to get to talk about Bigfoot just tickles me to death.
We're glad that you was willing to come on and talk about it.
Yeah,
now,
very happy.
You do an outdoor type of occupation, if memory serves me. How's your weather been? I mean, was you able to get a lot done this week?
This was the first good week we've had, really, since December. We've pretty well had 1 or 2 days rain. I own a landscaping company. And we've had 1 or 2 days a week with rain. And, of course, if it rains one day, then you got to wait a day to let it dry up. It's been terrible.
We're glad you had a good week this week. Well, all right. Well, Nate, how about you tell all these good folks a little bit about yourself? Oh, and before we get started too much, for some strange reason, the show is it's showing that they're only giving us 45 minutes tonight, so we better pack a lot of talking into 45 minutes. We're normally an hour-long show, but for whatever reason, it's showing 45 minutes tonight.
That shouldn't be a problem, because when you get me started, talking is my strong point.
Well, all right. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as we said before, I'm by trade a landscaper. But when I was 17, I had a encounter with call it what it is, a white Bigfoot. At a distance, there was no possible. Encounter was about, on the conservative side, about 2 hours. It followed me all over a place that we hunted regular. And, you know, since, and people say it's a life-changing experience, and it is. And in my opinion, there's two results when you see a Bigfoot. Or any cryptid for that matter, because you know, now Bigfoot's my thing. I saw possibly one dog man last summer, but I'm not sure. But it is. It's a life altering experience, and the two results are: one, people either implode, and for lack of better terms, they implode into themselves. And all the outdoor activity that they used to do, they stop. It becomes a terrifying thing to them. You know, if they jumped or hiked or hunted or whatever, they stop that. And the outdoors becomes taboo. Or it gives you an unquenchable thirst for knowledge of these creatures. And either way, it shows you that, you know, we don't know as much about the world we live in as we think we do. So, for me, that's what it did. It gave me an unquenchable thirst for knowledge having to do with these creatures. For off and on, since 1986, I have pretty well investigated. And I think there's a major difference in research. When you do research, it's to a, you know, it has an end game. When you investigate something, you investigate by occurrence or by incident. Well, that's what I've done for years, and it got to where that I, in my local area, people knew that I sort of dealt with this thing. So when somebody would have something happened, I would usually hear about it. And I would go look into it. And back last year, and now people really don't get a kick out of this, but until sometime last year, I still had a flip phone. I had never Googled
nothing
anything in my life. I didn't do the computer thing. I still don't do Facebook. I don't do social media. But although we've got people that do. But all that just wasn't my thing. I was more hands-on, outdoors kind of guy, woodsman, hunter, landscaper, anything to put me outdoors. Well, I got some friends that live up the road, and the father of this family is a mechanic. And he would go buy things at yard sales and trade days and stuff. He'd bring it home, and his wife and daughter, who was 21, would be out in the yard at all hours of the night looking through this stuff, deciding what was worth something, what wasn't. And they would, that was their pastime. Well, my wife would go up and help them. My wife is she's my greatest research partner. She, almost any time I go, she goes. She's a natural skeptic. She questions everything. She will boil it down to, it's not Bigfoot until every other possibility is exhausted, which is what you got to do to be a good researcher. But she's had her own experiences, her own encounters. So she was going up there, and they were hearing sounds in the woods. And she would come back and tell me about it, and they thought somebody was watching to rob them. And, of course, if that had been the case, they wouldn't be making this noise. They'd be trying to be quiet. And then the next thing you know, small things are being thrown from the woods. Then a few vocalizations. And then, lo and behold, they'd see one. And what they saw was a juvenile, about 5 feet tall. And my wife would gather, you know, she would come home and tell me what was happening. And I'm pretty slow to say Bigfoot because people don't want to hear that. And sometimes when you, you know, the ridicule you get, and most people are not ready to believe that. So I told my wife, I said, have them draw a picture of it. Well, the 21-year-old daughter drew a picture of it and brought it home, and basically she drew a picture of a juvenile Bigfoot. And
oh, wow.
They had caught it walking down the driveway. And I could go into the whole situation, but it's been on a couple of shows. It's been on Chasing the Beast, and what if these creatures started getting more bold and moving in closer, and there was one incident where the daughter was cleaning her car up. And she turned around and put a spotlight in one's face, not 25 feet behind her, in some weeds. It had the weeds parted, and I mean, it was right there. And it got almost to where I wasn't sure I was qualified to handle this situation because I had never seen this particular behavior. I had never seen this particular behavior out of a group from this area. And so I started going up there, and I had them clear out all the cover that was close to the house. A couple occasions we saw some, and I know from what Kumbo tells me, there's four types. Now, I've seen two types. I know for a fact that there are two types of Bigfoot. I know that there's a type one, which is a paddy type. And we have those right here in a valley right across from my house. And then the type twos that are, or the type ones or the paddy types, the type twos that I have seen were at this particular residence up here. They've got a little bit of a baboonish type muzzle and canines. Well, so that's the two types I do know exist. And the type twos, from the what I understand from talking with people, tend to be a little more aggressive. Well, that was what I was seeing out of this group. Well, I Googled Bigfoot. I got my first smartphone. I Googled Bigfoot, and I had no idea there was that much stuff on Bigfoot on the internet. So I listened and I listened and I listened, and the first person I wanted to get in touch with was Kumbo. But I'm computer illiterate, so I didn't have any idea how to go about doing this. So, and that will come into play at the end of this, but I contacted a few more people, and it turned out some of them only wanted me on their podcast, and some of them probably had less knowledge than I did about it. So I improvised. I'd done some things up there, and it's things that I'd really rather not say because it's not the safest things. I wouldn't recommend for somebody to do this, but it worked. And we got them backed off of this house. Well, in all this time that we were working with this, I met my friend Jack, my best friend. And I had this idea that I had been rolling around in my head because of the response I got when I tried to contact people for help for this family. And it just didn't work out. So I got thinking, you know, nobody knows enough about these creatures to nobody's an expert. But if there was some way that all the independent investigators scattered around everywhere and the groups, if they were communicating with each other rather than having the the ego thing get in the way to where if you don't think like me and you don't believe the things I believe, you're wrong, and I don't want to talk to you. And that's what I gathered from most of the people I talked to. So I got to rolling this idea around in my head. What the Bigfoot community needed was a database accessible to your common investigators. And so I talked with Jack about it, and Jack is one of these guys. He's a doer. I come up with ideas. I get great ideas, but most of my ideas, I have no idea how to put them in it to implement them because I'm about as tech savvy as a turtle. So I told Jack about it. Next thing I know, he's working on it. And we started putting all this together and talking with some guys, and he got our database on a server, I guess, whatever you call it, to get it out there to the public. But still, we had no internet presence. So what we did, Chuck's Lab, OK Chasing the Beast, D-Dawgs, a few guys posted the link, and I talked with Christy McLeod. He is another one of our greatest assets, Asheville Paranormal. And when I talked with him and I put this idea out there to him, and then he started having ideas. So I guess he would be technically among his many, many responsibilities with what we're trying to do here. He would be our public relations guy. And he started coming up with ideas. And these, him and Jack, they're why we are where we are. I just come up with ideas. And it seemed to be like something that was needed at the right time, and everything seemed to start falling into place with the right people in the right positions. A few months ago, I finally got in touch with Kumbo. I kind of laid it out to him what we were wanting to do, or what I was, you know, what we had in mind, and he called me back some time later, and he put together an outing over at his farm, and we went over, and I feel like he was pretty well checking my sincerity and my, you know, what I intended for, you know, what my real intentions were. And at the end of the day, he said, you know, I'll do this with you. So now we have Kumbo, which to me is the smartest. I mean, he's got more knowledge in his mind than I ever hoped to have. Tim Baker is, in my opinion, he's the professor in the Bigfoot world. So,
well, that's nice. I'd like to meet him sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a super guy.
Let me ask you something. You put this database together, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. How far back do the sightings go? And is it just Bigfoot, or is it Bigfoot and Dogman, or is it Bigfoot, Dogman, and other cryptids?
Well, what we have so far is Bigfoot and Dogman. And the name of our group is Big Dogs T2B. And the big is for Bigfoot, the dog is for Dogman. The T2 is for tracking and trending the beast. Now, right now, we have some encounters that goes back a pretty good ways. You know, back in, I think we have some from the 70s that people have called in and made a report on. The way it's set up, it's got basic questions that people can answer that are that help produce the data that people, you know, to set trends. To set a norm, a baseline for what to expect behavior-wise, terrain, what terrain do you usually, where do you usually see them, what time of the day, things like that. Now we're building a website. Or Jack anymore. I say we. They got a rat in their pocket because I got absolutely not much to do with it. But they're building a website, and eventually it will be to where our investigators and our policy is: if you submit a report, we will contact you. We will send you an email back. If you want to be, if you want to talk to investigators, one of us will personally call you. If you have a problem, and at this point, we don't have the network of investigators that we plan to at some point. But if it's any way possible, if somebody has a problem, we will do our everything in our power to help them work that problem out. That's our end game, to be able to have somebody, most anywhere anybody calls, have an investigator to go out and look into this particular encounter. And
we had a report of an encounter earlier this week. Not trying to cut you off, but tell me if you've ever heard of one like this.
Okay.
We're pretty sure there's Bigfoot activity on this piece of land. The homeowner lives up on a hill. It's about a mile-long driveway that winds around through the woods. As he's coming down, he sees off in the woods. He can't see a shape or anything like that because of the thick foliage, but he sees red-looking hair like would be on an orangutan. He sees it four or five different times going down through the woods, but the hair's up at about a five-foot-tall level. As far as I know, there's no other animal that would have that kind of hair or fur that would be up that tall. What do you think?
Well, I would say, I mean, and I've got a good friend that's been doing this for about 50 years, and he tells me when I say stuff like that, he'll say, call it what it is. Okay, when you eliminate all the other possibilities, the 5 foot high, that eliminates anything, most anything other than possibly a bear. Okay, you take a bear, a bear's only going to stay on his hind legs for so long. So that pretty well eliminates a bear. The color range
not a lot
on these
that
things.
Kind of hair.
Right. And a bear has fur. And from what I have seen, what I have personally seen, and the people, a Bigfoot has hair, not fur. And it's a substantial difference. The hair on the Bigfoot that I saw was more like long human hair. It was long on his head. It was long across his shoulders, long down the backs of his arms, and got substantially thinner as it went down his body. Now he was gray or white. So yeah, I would say that this is very possible Bigfoot activity. I would want to investigate. I would want to see what else is there that says there's Bigfoots on this property. But this is something that I found. Now, prior to, and I'll make a hypothetical timeline, prior to 2 years ago, in my particular area, and I'll use it for example because that's where the base of my knowledge is, North Alabama, most of the encounters in this area was very haphazard, spaced out, you know, two or three times a year you might hear something. But now, at this particular time, and I don't understand this, this is one of the questions that I have that I'm striving to answer because I used to be that guy that if I heard somebody saying they had too many encounters, that threw up a red flag to me. That this probably, you know, and something happens that just almost daily to show me that I'm not as smart as I think I am. Right now in my area, and this is from, and I'll give you, from Bankhead National Forest to Talladega National Forest, basically across that strip of central and North Alabama, at almost any given time, you can have some kind of interaction with a Bigfoot if you know what, if you know how to find them and you know what you're looking for. I don't understand why it's escalated like that. I don't understand if it's a population explosion. I had a theory on the wildfires a couple of years ago that was up around Gatlinburg. I thought maybe it pushed some down this way because last year we had a sort of an epidemic of black bears. People were seeing black bears everywhere, and that's something that we hadn't had around here in my lifetime. And of course, everybody knows up in the Smokies and around Gatlinburg, they're prominent. And all of a sudden, we're having them down here. So I did, you know, it's logical that if it pushed the black bears this way looking for new habitat because of the habitat that was destroyed up there, it possibly could have pushed the boogers down this way too. It's just an idea.
That's true.
I thought, you know, the best I'd say, I think it holds water. I don't know that it's a fact. But
it's a very good theory, though.
We had a lady right over the road here. Her husband passed away a little over a year ago, and it become hard for her to sleep. So she got to where she might be up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on her back porch drinking coffee. And she got roared at. I said, "So you got growled at?" She said, "No, honey, I got roared at." And she said it was the sound that it made. She said, "It's the only thing I can think of that's anywhere close." And she said, "But then again, it's not that." Scared her, and so I went over and investigated it. Me and my buddy Jay, we looked into it, my wife, and I found a bamboo thicket there with a bedding area. I put a voice recorder in there, and no sooner than I had put it up and left, it approached the voice recorder. You could hear it walk up to it, walk away, walk up to it, walk away. Later on, it was stealing. She would clean out her cat's litter box and put the used cat litter on the porch and put it in the garbage the next day. The cat litter came up gone, not strode, gone. So I talked with a veterinarian, and of course I didn't say, "Okay, I think I've got a Bigfoot eating cat manure." I didn't go that route. I asked him. I said, "You know, a dog that don't normally eat manure will eat cat manure." He said, "Well, it's like this." He said, "There's three reasons dogs do that. One could be a possible something in there to get rid of parasites, and two, there's something in that manure that they need." Said cat feed has more protein in it. Cat pet food has more protein in it than most pet foods. Therefore, their feces does. So what I deduced about that, and here again, it's just an idea, but this is the way my mind works. I think this is what makes me a decent investigator. I think it was a young adult male that was living by himself, and he was having a hard time eating because he didn't have the benefit of the group to hunt with. So I think he was very opportunistic. He was eating whatever he could find. And at first, I was real uneasy about this situation. We found a piece of bamboo about 7 feet long with a root ball on it, had bird feathers all over it, out in this bamboo thicket, like he'd killed a bird with it. We later found the bird laying beside this man's car, the same little blue feathers. So I think it gave her the bird for the cat manure.
Well, that's interesting.
I don't know. It was interesting.
Well, I've heard of,
say the least, interesting. I don't know. You know,
I've heard
of
big
with the whole
gifting things.
Oh, I'm a little leery of the whole gifting situation because I wouldn't want them to get too used to getting things. You know, to me, if you're going to gift them, don't gift them food.
It could almost lead to a violent situation if it gets withdrawn, right?
It could, I think. But I think this particular one, he didn't have the confidence. And I'll give you a scenario. I do these little studies on different things. And I've done a study on lions. Now, I realize lions are not primates, and I do believe that Bigfoot is a North American primate. But that's the beauty of the
subject.
You can think anything you want to. I think you can think anything you want to. I've got respect for the people that I mean, you will never hear in our group somebody thinks they're aliens, and there are people that think that. My wife's a little bit in that camp because she can't explain things that they do. You'll never hear me put you down for that because, to be honest with you, I got no evidence that says anything different. This is what we're trying to build here is a no ridicule, no judgment kind of group. But this study I did on lions, see, when a young male lion comes of age, breeding age, they're pushed out of the group by the dominant males. Then they're nomadic males. Usually there's more than one. There's brothers, and they form a coalition. And eventually they take over a pride. But when they first are pushed out, they have low confidence. And that's sort of what I saw in this. He didn't have, because when I started messing around over there, he didn't stay long. He moved right out. He's not there now. And I believe he was recently banned from his group. I think his confidence level was low. He was eating whatever he could find for enough nutrition to keep him alive. And I think that my presence there, as much as I was there, made him uneasy and he moved on. I think had he been a mature adult, like, it was much harder to move this group away up here at this residence than it was him. He just moved away on his own. And I've got all these theories, and I'm sure everybody else does too. I think everybody else has ideas like this, and I want to hear them. I want to hear, you know, does anybody else think what I'm thinking? And that's the whole purpose of this database, and it's going to be the whole purpose of investigators working together. I mean, if an investigator wants to join our group, that's great. If he wants to operate under the big dogs, that's great, but it's not necessary. If he just wants to work with us, if he wants to gain from our information and feed a little information back, that's great too. Our only rules are we are strictly non-judgmental. We're not, no matter what people's ideas are, we're not gonna cast stones.
Now, are you a non-kill group, or do you advocate killing, or?
I don't have a stand on that. I have a personal stand on it, and my personal stand is I don't want to be that guy. Killing a Bigfoot is not on my list of things to do. And when I say that, when I research, I am heavily harmed.
But it's more of a self-defense thing than a...
Right. I usually carry a 44 Magnum sidearm, and I will carry a 12-gauge pump or a 300 blackout. Because I'm the kind of guy, if you go to the woods with me, I'm responsible for you. And if you go with me, you will come back with me. And I feel the same. If a situation gets bad, I at least want the playing field level. But I am not I'm not that guy that ever. I don't want to be that guy that kills Bigfoot.
I would hate to be that guy either.
Forever known as the one who killed Bigfoot.
I say this: if I ever did for any reason, probably wouldn't nobody ever know it. Because that is not the way that I would want to prove this.
To be honest, it'd probably be covered up by somebody anyway.
Could be. I'm not big on the conspiracy theory. I think it's possible. The thing about it, and the reason I'm not big on it, is because either way, there's nothing that I can do about it. And though our government is not perfect, we have the best thing going.
Oh, absolutely we do. Hey, Nate, I'd like to play a game with you here for a moment, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Something I think would be beneficial to some other people, because you've got years and years of experience, and there's a lot of skeptics out there. I get these questions all the time. So I would like to ask you, play devil's advocate here, and ask you a few questions, and see if you will answer them for me. Man, if there's a Bigfoot, why aren't there more pictures?
Well, that's simple. They did a study here a while back on primates and game cameras. A very interesting study. But the amount of, and it's on YouTube. I can't think who it is, but each primate noticed. Now, each one reacted different. They were all grade A. Each one reacted different. But when they put the game cameras out, first thing, every one of them noticed it. Every one of them knew immediately that it was there. So hiding one from them, that's not going to happen, first thing. Second thing, when somebody has an encounter, prior to the fact that everybody having a cell phone that with a good camera on it, very few people had a camera. Now that you take your cell phone, that everybody has a cell phone, that's still a simple answer. How long does it take you to pull up your camera and take a picture? And how long does most sightings last? Most sightings
are seconds. Takes probably good 30, 40 seconds.
Most sightings last seconds. And when they when something lasts seconds, first thing you got to consider is reaction time. Your mind's got to adjust to what you saw. Then you got to react to it. You got to take that picture. By then, it's over. A good picture is probably a once in a hundred lifetimes thing. A good picture is something that I don't even expect.
Awesome. Next question. With all these drones and things we have now, why hasn't somebody got some FLIR footage or some temperature body heat?
That's pretty simple, too. Most people don't have a drone with FLIR because we've looked into getting one. And bottom end of that is $5,000 for something that it does the job, but it's not a quality camera. It's not a quality thermal. A drone is above the canopy of the trees. A drone makes noise. A drone draws attention. You draw the attention of a thinking, and I'm not talking about your common prey animals, but a thinking creature, something that obviously thinks, that wants to remain hidden, they're probably not going to present themselves for that picture. I've got some really good thermal. I've got some thermal from the ground, but there's no doubt what it is. But most of my thermal that I have, the best one I've got, I wasn't even focusing on the creature that was in the thermal, the best picture. I was looking at one further away, a heat signature at about 80 yards when there's one 30 feet from me. And I never knew it was there. Knew that I had that thermal until I downloaded it on my laptop.
That's awesome. See, I tell people a lot of times, there's a lot of good evidence people have out there. Sometimes they don't submit it because they don't want to be made fun of or be called a hoaxer. Some people, they just want to keep it for themselves. They keep it for private research, but there's a lot more pictures, a lot more thermal out there now than people realize. You know, just because you haven't seen these pictures don't mean that other people haven't got it.
Well, some of these we will eventually release. What we do before we release anything, of course, we don't have the platform to release all this in place just yet. But when we do, we will scrutinize it to the utmost ourselves. We will present it to people and see what their reaction is. And if there's a flaw in it, we're not going to put it out, because when you put stuff out that is questionable, you do become scrutinized. And that's a problem.
It really is.
I mean,
it honestly is.
People are slow to accept that. And like some of the things we've got, me and my wife got thermal on the biggest one I ever saw, riding down the, do that a lot. We'll ride around. She'll run thermal out the window. And this particular one we found coming up a mountain on the side of the road. Probably it's not as clear as I'd like for it to be, so this may not never get put out.
Now, Nate, I've got a quick question for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
You said you've been doing your research in the mountains, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll say mountains. Around here, our mountains are not like, we're the foothills of the Appalachians is what we are. And mountains around here, a lot of them are more like plateaus, but yes, mountainous areas.
Okay. I was wondering if, since you're kind of part of that region, if you've ever heard of a cryptid called a grave robber or a grave digger?
No, I haven't. Tell me a little bit about it.
There's a cryptid that's not very widely known anymore, as people who knew about it are kind of starting to die out. But there's a cryptid called a grave digger, or a grave robber, sorry. And it's generally described as looking kind of like an anteater, but they'll find big giant holes dug up in freshly dug graves, and they'll presumably eat the bodies there.
Huh. That's interesting.
It's something I like to ask about.
They used
about
to build a lot of old grave houses and cemeteries to protect the bodies from these grave robbers.
Mm-hmm. There's cemeteries around here that's got those grave boxes like you're talking about. That's got the thin rocks with the big rock on top of it.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they would literally build a little death house over the like over the four or five graves, you know, just to kind of keep something out.
I've never heard of that.
We've seen a video just today. Don't know what it was, but is a video that somebody shot in a cemetery of some kind of blackish thing digging open a little hole in the grave, so it kind of made me rethink about it.
You know, and you just
wow,
did on something.
Wow, 45 minutes went quick.
Oh, are we already through?
Yeah, I think we've got a little grace period here, so let's keep going just a couple more minutes.
Okay, well, you just hit on something that is basically what we're about. Just because I haven't heard of it. Now, used to, I was strictly a Bigfoot guy. And the whole Dogman thing has made me rethink that. I had up at the residence up the road here, I had some light blue, almost electric blue eyeshine. I've never seen a Bigfoot with blue eyeshine. It's always been an amber, real orangey looking to a almost demonic-looking red. And that's all the booger eyeshine I've ever seen. But I had one up here. It was tall and lanky, and it was like an electric, almost, looked almost like a shorted-out electric wire, the spark that it makes. It was almost that color. And Kumbo tells me that's probably a dog, man.
It probably
and
is.
It didn't. It it looked like it was trying to get me to follow it. It started into a pine thicket, and it stopped and looked back at me and made sure that I had time to notice it stopping and looking back at me, and then it went on into the thicket. Of course, I'm talking to you, so I didn't follow it, but that's the distinct impression I got, and I wrestled with that for a little while, and then I talked with Turnbull about it, told him, and Tim said it was probably a dog man. And I'll buy that because it did nothing about it other than the size and the height of it say Bigfoot. I mean, it was all
right. It probably was. Was that in Alabama?
Yes, it was right up the road from my house.
Wow. Yeah, we were contacted this week. I'm sorry. We were contacted this week by a deputy sheriff from West Virginia who said that he could absolutely guarantee that there is an upright
bipedal canid.
Yeah, bipedal canid in his area.
I don't doubt that. I mean, if there's going to be anything in anywhere, West Virginia would be the place. I mean, West Virginia is what, 80% wilderness? Maybe
yeah,
not harder than
that.
There
used to be a lot of coal country too, with probably a lot of mines and caves.
Right, right. Oh, and that's another thing that I'm finding. Now we have last fall we got good thermal on a creature coming out of a cave. We were camped in a valley over here beside my house. That is nothing but sinkholes. And these caves got tunnels that goes for miles. They've been the geologists and the people that survey these caves have done maps of them. And there's caves in this particular cave system. There's tunnels 5 or 6 miles in almost any direction, deep in the ground. And we got thermal on a creature come out of these caves and up the side of this, the entrance to the cave is down in this sinkhole that's about 85 feet deep that you have to rappel down into. And it was coming up a sheer rock face, fixing to come up behind our camp and realized that I was asleep, but my buddy Jay was standing watch. We always try to post watch. And when it realized he was watching it, what he done is he woke me up, and I made so much noise getting up that it went back down and went back into that cave. So this fall, I'm not really the spooky type, but I don't like rattlesnakes, and there's a lot of them down there. This fall, when the snakes go into hibernation, we plan on traveling into this cave a little piece. I don't know how far we're going because I'm 6'2", weighing nearly 300 pounds. I'm not a small guy, so I don't really like enclosed places. I'm not going to get down and crawl through a hole not much bigger than me. I just ain't that guy. But as long as I've got room to move around, I'll go in there. I don't like being confined. But there has been a report of one of the guys that surveys these caves seeing a Bigfoot in this particular cave. And I wasn't sure about that until later when we saw it come out of that cave. There's no doubt in my mind. And I tell you another thing about this valley. I see no tree structures. I see very few tree breaks. The traditional Bigfoot sign, for the most part, is not there. And I think that's because they have adequate shelter in these caves. So there's no reason for them to build a tree structure. And this is a group
Makes
of
sense.
Type ones. This is a group of type ones that have, until this other group moved in, have predominantly lived here in peace. So there's been no reason for territorial markers. Now, you can come up out of that valley on any side. And as soon as you get to the top where they start coming in contact with people and or this other group, you will start seeing tree structures and tree breaks. A lot of them. And another thing, I don't see anything that leads me to believe that this group of type 2s and this group of type 1s interact. I've seen no evidence that says that they even that they mess with each other. I don't think the type 1 or the type 2s goes into the valley. I think the type 1s come out, and that's another story. I believe that I have reason to believe that I have known of them being out of the valley on two different occasions. But I kindly think the type 1s go where they darn well please, because they don't think, you know, because the others can't do nothing about it. The type 1s in this valley, there's not a lot of difference in the height. They're all, we've got one that's probably around 9 or 10 feet. But they're much bulkier. From what I've seen, they're bigger. The type 2s that were up here at the Malone residence that I was telling you about, they're big, broad in the shoulders with a narrower hip, but they're just not as bulky as the ones in this valley. And I sort of put the type 1s and type 2s. The ones in the valley are across the board bigger. I don't know if that holds water everywhere or not. I don't know if that's and I would like to talk. That's another thing. I'd like to talk to researchers in other places, see if they see that same difference in them. I mean, all
now,
these
the ones
things
around here seem to be tall and lanky, but muscular and athletic.
I would that's sort of the way these type 2s are. Now, the ones in this valley, the type 1s, tend to be a little bigger around the middle, a little bigger in the hips and whatnot, from what I saw. But there again, my experience is limited to what I saw. And I will always try to say, you know, in my opinion, this is what I think. Because, to be honest with you, my opinion ain't worth much more than, I mean, I'm not claiming to know anything that anybody else don't know. If somebody tell me something I don't know if I can do that or not. Because so many times has something that I was almost positive of, almost 100% sure of, and then something happened to make me question that. I mean,
Elijah,
this is a learning process.
Yes, it is. And I just had a weird thought. Okay. Now, have you ever heard of the study that was done, the Rat Utopia?
No.
If you haven't, look at the studies done with the Rat Utopia, and I wonder how that would apply to a colony of Bigfeet. Or Bigfoots, as people call it.
I imagine it'd be very terrifying once it was all said and done. Very violent Bigfeet.
Yes, but what? At the same time, they eventually started getting to the point that they started breeding themselves out of existence. They reproduced heavy for a while, and then they started gradually dying out.
That may be why
if you've not ever heard of the Rat Utopia, you should look that mm-hmm. up. You know, there's videos about it, and see if
uh-huh.
if that applies in any way with the possibility of Sasquatch.
I'll look that up when we get off. I will, because that sounds interesting to me. I believe, and I heard this from, and this is not my idea, but I sort of buy into it. The whole human diseases that we brought from Europe that were so hard on the Native Americans, I don't know that those diseases might not have been hard on the Bigfoot, too. I'm not sure, not being in the medical field, I don't know what diseases would really, and we don't know how close to us they are. From what I understand about the DNA that's been gathered that it's closer to us than chimps or gorillas. It's about halfway between. So is that close enough for? Yeah, they're 98%, so that would put a Bigfoot, what, 99? That's the only way it could be.
Yeah, and even at that, there's still light years of information between the two. They're definitely different species, but there are definitely definite similarities, too.
Right. And so if we go that route, could smallpox have devastated at one time the population of the Bigfoot? And if that be the case, if that be the case, is the population now on a rebound? Because, to be honest
with
you,
might explain why there's an uptick.
Not enough people accept the fact of the existence of Bigfoot. Ain't nobody out there hunting them. They're not a game animal. They're not. So there is no reason for them not to be thriving.
Well, the only natural predator they might have would be another Bigfoot or a dog man.
Or a grizzly bear.
Yep. I've been told by people that they've found a lot of grizzly bear and black bears, dug into where they hibernate, and found these things crushed to death. Something done dug them up and done crushed them. There ain't a lot could do that to a grizzly bear.
That's right. And another thing, grizzlies are what they used to be. You know, if you go back, and of course, I don't know, I sort of leave a little room for exaggeration in this because back in the day, back in the early 1800s, they didn't have a ready way to weigh them, but there was a lot of accounts back in the 1800s of grizzlies, say, in California, weighing 2,000 pounds. That's that's almost unheard of now.
That's a big grizzly.
That's a big grizzly. But now, is that true? You got to factor in the possibility of exaggeration because they ain't got no means to weigh it. So
just
I'm
like
saying conservatively.
Big fish scenario.
Right, right. Conservatively, let's say 1,300 pounds. All right, you could take a 1,300 pound grizzly, and Bigfoot included. There is no animal on the face of this earth more capable than a 1,300 pound grizzly. Now the problem is there ain't many 1,300 pound grizzlies. 600 or 700 pounds, in the lower 48, and then you got the Alaskan brown bear that gets up there, probably 1,600 pounds when they're ready to hibernate. But that is a formidable predator. So, I would say with a Bigfoot, or your average Bigfoot, you know, to a big grizzly, I'd say it's the playing field probably pretty level. I've done a lot of studies on bears, on grizzlies, and they're formidable.
Yes, they
and
are.
I'd say that, and they have a chip on their shoulder. They are a naturally aggressive species, so that's going to work in their favor. They're quicker to get at it. So do I say that a grizzly is naturally afraid of a Bigfoot? I doubt it. I think there's probably a live and let live policy because no animal is apt to do things in the wilderness that's going to cause them physical trauma. I mean, they're...
Because if they lose an eye, they're at the mercy.
Right, and I'll give you grizzlies, I'll use them for example again. Very seldom, when two grizzlies establish dominance, they just slap each other around a little bit, and one of them will move away. they establish their dominance, but it ain't, it's not a vicious, I'm going to kill you kind of fight. Now, with that said, if that was the case with a Bigfoot, the grizzly might not buy into that kind of fact. But I think it would be out of wisdom rather than fear. And another thing that people don't realize, people say that, that animals don't reason. But I read an article about a grizzly bear, and a guy, a hunter, he was an elk hunter, and he was charged by a grizzly, and his only choice was to jump off of this about a 20 or 25 foot bluff. That's what he did. But this bear went downriver and reasoned out the path of this river, and instead of following him down the riverbank, he went ahead of him where he knew he was going to be. Luckily, the guy come out on the opposite side of the river, and for whatever reason, the bear didn't cross. But the bear went downriver. He did not follow line of sight. He went downriver and found to a place where he knew this guy would pass and waited for him. So predators do reason. And predators, their thing is, people traveling in the woods will pass these things and never see them. Because the human eye, especially the modern human eye, is not trained to, we see things vertically. Everything we see is vertical. And if you take something like a Bigfoot, and I'm fixing to do this, I'm fixing to order me a quality ghillie suit, and I'm gonna have my wife, I'm gonna go stand places, squat places, and take pictures, and I wanna post it, and we're gonna make it clear, this is Nate in a ghillie suit. Can you see? Find him in this picture. And if it's what I think it is, if the result of this is what I think it's going to be, people will be able to see how they can walk right by these creatures and never see them.
That's a good experiment. Well, Nate, well, I'm short here, but our time is past and we're running out of our grace period time. In the closing moments, would you like to tell us anything else?
You.
Oh, man, we was glad to have you.
Anybody has an encounter, we need it on our database because the more data, the more valuable it is.
And we have that shared on our page.
If anybody needs to speak to an investigator, contact us, and we will. Somebody will contact you back. And if you have a problem, that's what we're here for, to help you work that problem out. I mean, it's my mission, and people tell me that it can't be done. But our mission in this is to unify the Bigfoot world, to make everybody part of it, and to be able to gather as much data as possible. And maybe all of us together can come up with some of those answers that seems to be getting away from us on a daily basis.
Hear, hear. That sounds like a great thing. Well, Nate, brother, we loved having you on the show. We'd love to get you back on the show in a few months if you'd be up for it.
Yeah,
anytime you want to. And I want to say thank you to Jack and Christian McLeod for all that they've done. We wouldn't
thank
be
you, Christian.
We don't know Jack,
but we're sure he's awesome. But we do know Christian, and we'd like to say thank you to Christian as well. And thank you to Jody Cook and to Lisa Lycan X for everything that she's done for us lately. Well, guys, it's been a great show. We're certainly glad that Nate was willing to be on for us. We ask you to check out his website, and if you have a problem, give him a call. If you can't get a hold of those guys, give us a call. Give somebody a call. Don't let your life be ruined by some sort of an encounter, because there is help out there. There are people willing to believe you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And there's people, you know, that just for instance, you know, if they get in touch with you and you want to put them in touch with me, you can give them my number. My phone number I usually don't put on public for them, but if somebody calls, you give them my number, they can call. And
I will, because sometimes they may not be in the region where we can help them, but we may know somebody in a region of the country like you or like Christian or some other person who can help them close to where they are.
We've got people scattered around right now. We've got quite a few in Oklahoma. And Kumbo knows somebody everywhere. So if they need help most anywhere they're at, we can get that help for them.
Well, all right.
I'll call Tim. Tim will put somebody on.
Well, we will definitely stay in touch with you, because that's what we should all be here for, working together, trying to help one another. And again, Nate, thank you for being on the show. Elijah, do you have anything to add in these last moments?
Nothing other than Nate, thank you very much for being on with us tonight.
Thank you for the
opportunity, folks.
Brother. Thank you.
Until next time, stay groovy.
Take care, y'all.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.